VOA's Joe Ramsey with this worldwide news update. The U.S. on Wednesday again delivered weapons to Ukraine as the Trump administration waits for Russia's response to a ceasefire deal that Kyiv has endorsed. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
It's up to Russia now.
President Trump says he hopes Moscow signs off on a proposal that could lead to the war ending. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says it's important not to get ahead of things, and Russia needs more detailed information from the U.S. before making any decision. Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky is also waiting for Moscow's answer, saying a 30-day ceasefire would allow both sides to work out a step-by-step plan for ending the war. A Trump envoy is expected to travel this week to Moscow, where he could meet with Putin. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Pakistan's military said security forces stormed a train on Wednesday that had been hijacked by separatist militants. It said forces killed all 33 attackers, ending a day-long standoff involving hundreds of hostages. Reuters correspondent Arthi Thayaprin reports.
The Baloch Liberation Army, or BLA, blew up a railway track and opened fire on the train as it was traveling through southwestern Pakistan. It was carrying over 400 passengers. A military spokesperson said 21 hostages and four security troops were killed over the course of the standoff. The BLA said before the army announcement that it had killed 50 passengers. The group had threatened to start executing hostages unless authorities met a 48-hour deadline. For the release of political prisoners, activists, and missing people it says had been abducted by the military.
Reuters correspondent Arthi Thayaprin. This is VOA News. The International Criminal Court said former Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte was taken into custody by the ICC on Wednesday following his arrest in Manila on murder charges linked to his war on drugs. Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino reports.
The 79-year-old arrived at Rotterdam Airport on a chartered plane and was transferred to a detention unit on the Dutch coast. The court's warrant for his arrest alleges that, as president, Duterte created, funded, and armed death squads that carried out murders of purported drug users and dealers. Duterte's war on drugs was a signature of his presidency, which lasted from 2016 to 2022. The anti-drugs crackdown killed thousands and drew condemnation from around the world.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino. After hundreds of people were killed in massacres on Syria's coastline last week, locals say widespread calls for justice may give the country's new government a chance to stabilize. Heather Murdoch reports from northwest Syria.
Bassem Mahna was in his home with his two sons on Friday morning when armed men stormed into his house.
We refused to evacuate our homes. It was my family, my cousin and I. They entered the house and killed my cousin and two other families. They raided our house and threatened to behead us. They looted everything, money and cars.
Hundreds of people were killed here in Syria's coastal area last week and over the weekend, with some death counts exceeding 1,400. Analysts say many of the killings were acts of revenge for the abuses of dictator Bashar al-Assad's regime, which collapsed in early December. Many of the victims were Alawite, the religious sect of former regime leaders, but not necessarily abusers themselves. Analysts say the fighting was initially provoked by pro-Assad attackers who also committed mass killings. Heather Murdoch in Istanbul with our team in Syria, VOA News.
U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday threatened to escalate the global trade war with new tariffs on trading partners as 25% tariffs on steel and aluminum kicked in. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
Canada, the biggest foreign supplier of steel and aluminum to the United States, announced its retaliatory tariffs on billions of dollars of U.S. products starting Thursday. The EU's countermeasures are due to take effect next month, targeting up to $28 billion worth of U.S. goods.
Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Batty in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 13, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Angola announces new peace talks between the DRC and M23 rebels as SADC leaders meet today, Thursday.
They talk about talking, but there is never any talking. Because the people that are directly involved in this conflict, DRC, Burundi, and Rwanda, why are they not talking?
The Islamist State in the Sahel expands terror threat beyond its strongholds. IGAD urges South Sudan to release detained officials and relax security. The ECOWAS regional bloc activates its counter-terror standby force.
The activation of this force underscores our collective determination to confront the scourge of terrorism with regards to insecurity and ensure the safety and security of our citizens.
And Russia's leadership is ready to open the champagne ahead of expected Ukraine peace talks. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Leaders of the Southern African Development Community, also known as SADC, will meet virtually today, Thursday, to discuss the conflict in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. This will be the third summit on the DRC conflict in 3 months. Meanwhile, Angola announced Wednesday that it will host peace talks between the DRC and M23 rebels. Reuters reports that the talks will take place on March 18 in the Angolan capital, Luanda. It will be the first direct meeting between the DRC government and the M23. The DRC accuses Rwanda of supporting the M23 rebels, but Kigali denies the allegations. Tendai Ruby Bofana is a Zimbabwe political analyst. He tells me any resolution of the DRC conflict will have to include not just DRC and M23, but their backers as well.
Quite honestly, James, I don't expect much to come out of that extraordinary meeting, because let's remember this. The war in the Democratic Republic of Congo did not start yesterday or last week or last month. This war has been going on for years. SADC has been looking on. It has held meetings after meetings before, and nothing of substance has come out. They have never been able to stop the war. Actually, under the current chairperson of SADC, which is Zimbabwe, there have already been three, if I'm not mistaken, extraordinary meetings specifically called to address the issue in the DRC. And even as recent as only 2 months ago or a month ago, they even went to the extent of holding a joint meeting between the Southern African Development Community and the East African countries. And still, nothing came out of it. If anything, the M23 rebels continue to make significant inroads. They're capturing more towns in the eastern part of the DRC. And yet, SADC is just talk after talk after talk. They're not even negotiating. There's never been any talk of the Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi meeting with his Rwandan counterpart, Paul Kagame, whom they accused for backing and funding the M23 rebels.
But there's a new offer that the M23 is willing to talk, and I think also Angola would like to get these two together to talk.
Yes, you see, now that's where the issue is. They talk about talking, but there's never any talking, because the people that matter are the ones that are directly involved in this conflict. We already know that Rwanda is involved, Burundi is involved, ostensibly on the side of the Democratic Republic of Congo, and of course the DRC itself is involved. Then we also have a few forces from SADC, South Africa, and so forth, who are there supposedly for peacekeeping. But the main antagonists, DRC, Burundi, and Rwanda, why are they not talking? And interestingly, the DRC president himself has never attended any of the recent meetings that have been held to address the issues in his own country. So the issue would be, why is SADC even bothering to sit down and call for these extraordinary meetings when the main player himself is not interested in attending? What is the point?
You mentioned the SADC troops in the DRC. Are they still there, or what role are they playing?
They are still there. That's what we are being told. But as you would remember, quite a number of them are being killed. Recently, South Africa lost quite a significant number of their troops in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And some reports that we have received over the past month most of these SADC forces are actually encircled by the M23 rebels. They're actually being protected by the M23 rebels at times. And if the reports that we are receiving are anything to go by, they are even receiving food from M23 rebels because they are encircled by the M23 rebels. They've been cut off from all supplies. So they are practically dependent on their own adversaries.
Tendai Ruby Bofana is a Zimbabwe political analyst. He was speaking with us from the Zimbabwe capital, Harare. Security analysts are praising the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, for activating its regional standby force, but remain doubtful about its effectiveness following the recent withdrawal of three member states. The West African regional body announced the measure on Tuesday in Abuja, stating that it aims to curb terrorism and cross-border crimes. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigerian Defense Minister Muhammad Badaru Abubakar announced the activation of a standby military force Tuesday on the sidelines of the 43rd security meeting of the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS. The force, expected to comprise 5,000 troops, is part of a broader regional security strategy. He said the initiative aims to mobilize personnel and resources to combat terrorism spreading across the sub-region and urged security counterparts to seize the opportunity to coordinate efforts against threats.
I am pleased to highlight the activation of the ECOWAS standby force to combat terrorism in the sub-region. The activation of this force underscores our collective determination to confront the scourge of terrorism with regards to insecurity and ensure the safety and security of our citizens.
ECOWAS security chiefs also discussed peace support operations and maritime security in the Gulf of Guinea. The force's activation follows a report by the Global Terrorism Index, which identified Africa's Sahel region as the global epicenter of extremism, accounting for half of all terror-related fatalities in 2024. This marks an almost tenfold increase compared to 2019. Security analyst Kabir Adam welcomes the move, but expresses concerns about its effectiveness.
The last detail that we know, even though that could change, is that it would have two operational bases within the sub-region. But we know that the ability to even acquire the 5,000 man troops has been a bit challenged. The countries that initially agreed to deposit three of them are no longer within ECOWAS. So now ECOWAS would have to look back within its members to see who among them will augment the gap.
In late January, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger withdrew from ECOWAS and created a confederation known as the Alliance of Sahel States after a year-long dispute with the bloc. The three military-led nations accused the regional body of failing to protect its members while allegedly serving foreign interests. Despite their exit, ECOWAS has stated it will maintain trade and security relations with the trio. Adamu says these ongoing relationships could be beneficial.
Given the financial situation and then the status and conditions of the military contingents in almost all the countries, it will be very difficult for these things to be met in a manner that would allow speedy deployment. But the good thing is that the defense and security cooperation between the AES and ECOWAS still stands, both multilateral and bilateral. So we're hoping that in spite of the exit, all sides would see the necessity to continue to engage in this security defense.
Jihadist groups, including Boko Haram and Islamic State's Sahel affiliate, have taken advantage of political instability and public resentment to recruit and expand their influence. With almost all the ECOWAS countries facing internal security challenges, observers are watching to see whether the regional force can shift the status quo amid strained cooperation. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
So, Mali officials say security forces have ended a 24-hour siege at a hotel in the central city of Belenwai, The Associated Press reports that the assault left an unknown number of people dead, including all the Al-Shabaab militants who launched the attack. The violence began when a car bomb exploded on Tuesday at a Cairo hotel, which houses traditional elders and military officers involved in coordinating the government's offensive against Al-Shabaab. Al-Shabaab, which is affiliated with Al-Qaeda, claimed responsibility for the attack. Footage shared on social media showed thick smoke rising from the hotel with significant destruction to the building. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 13th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. South Sudan's main opposition group is welcoming the release of eight of its members from detention by national security. But the SPLMAIO says 21 others, including key political and military leaders, remain behind bars. Among them are Petroleum Minister Paul Khan, SPLMAIO Military Chief Duo Lam, and lawmaker Gatwish Lam, who was arrested on Tuesday. Deng Gai Deng reports for VOA from Juba.
Pok Both Baluang, the press secretary for First Vice President Riek Machar, says the SPLM-IO was pleased to see the release of the eight members arrested by the National Security Service on Tuesday.
Yesterday evening, eight members comprised of three staff members in the office of the Minister of Petroleum, Paul Potkang, the relatives to the minister, members of the party, has been released by the National Security Service. We welcome this step, and also we call upon the SSPDF and the National Security Service to release the remaining 20 members of the SPLM-SPLAIO that has been under detention.
Pok says Gatwish Lam Poch, a senior SPLM-IO member and lawmaker representing Nasir County in the National Parliament, was arrested on Tuesday at his residence in Juba's Thongping neighborhood. He is being held at the Blue House, a notorious NSS detention center. Pok is calling on the government to release all the remaining 21 political detainees.
The information we have that they have been unlawfully detained. Some of them, they are constitutional post holders and so on and so forth. We believe this is an procedural arrest and they are arbitrary arrest. So there's no any information given to us of which the SSPDF and the National Security decide to undergo a manhunt for our members. These arrests, they have paralyzed the process of the implementation of this agreement.
The SPLM-IO warns that the continued arrest and unlawful detention of its members in Juba and other states could threaten the 2018 revitalized peace agreement and push the country back into conflict. When asked about the arrested SPLAIO military officials and whether they will face trial, the spokesperson for the South Sudan's People's Defense Force, Major General Lul Roy Kong, had little to say.
I'm not given any information.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei-Lueth refused to confirm the release of the eight SPLM-IO members.
We don't respond to public statements. These people were arrested, with an evidence that already captured. They know what happened in Nasser. They know what happened here.
Last week, Makuei confirmed the arrest of SPLM-IO politicians, saying they had violated the law. However, he did not provide details of the charges against the men or whether they would face trial. Tensions between the ruling SPLM led by President Salva Kiir and the SPLM-IO led by First Vice President Riek Machar have stalled the implementation of the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement. Each side accuses the other of violations. The latest arrests come after a deadly clash 2 weeks ago in Nasir County between the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the White Army militia, reportedly resulting in multiple casualties. The government has accused SPLM-AIO leaders of collaborating with the militia, a charge the opposition denies. SPLM-AIO is urging the government to deploy the necessary unified forces, arguing that civilians trust them more than government soldiers. However, government officials say the unified forces cannot be deployed due to an arms embargo, which has left them without weapons. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Juba.
In late February, Moroccan authorities broke up a 12-member terror cell linked to Islamic State in the Sahel, while in November, another terror ring allegedly aligned with the group had been dismantled in Spain. Analysts warn that these crackdowns could signal the group is expanding beyond Africa's Sahel region. Henry Wilkins reports.
On February 24th, the Moroccan counter-terror agency broke up a terrorist cell, calling itself the Lions of the Caliphate in the Maghreb, Al-Aqsa. The authorities said the group was making remote-controlled bombs to carry out attacks in the North African country. In November, a similar terrorist cell was dismantled in the Spanish cities of Seville and Ceuta. The connection? Both the Moroccan and Spanish authorities said the groups were aligned with the Islamic State in the Sahel. The group is best known for wreaking a devastating wave of violence across Burkina Faso, Niger and Mali, plunging these countries into chaos and fueling a spiralling humanitarian crisis. But analysts say the foiled terror cells further afield are a worrying sign. Beverly O'Chieng is a senior analyst at Control Risks, a geopolitical risk consultancy.
Because the counterinsurgency infrastructure in Mali, Burkina Faso and Niger has been compromised, then it allows them to make inroads into other countries that they perceive to be vulnerable.
O'Chieng says IS Sahel's strategy appears increasingly focused on exploiting security gaps beyond their core Sahelian strongholds.
IS Sahel has seen that its expansion could be directed much further west and much further north, and Morocco would be one place which would be of strategic interest to it.
Andrew Leibovich from the Dutch international affairs think tank Klingendael agrees that these disruptive plots are indicative of IS Sahel's broader ambitions.
It does suggest an ongoing effort to increase operations in different ways in other countries.
Asked what other countries could be in the Islamic State in the Sahel's crosshairs, Leibovich responded,
certainly there is an increasing threat to Algeria.
But it's not just North Africa that's at risk. O'Chieng warns that countries traditionally seen as stable, such as Guinea or even Senegal, could become future targets for IS Sahel militants too. In March, the Global Terrorism Index named the Sahel the epicenter of global terrorism for the second year running. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
The government of Sierra Leone has told the French news agency, the AFP, that the country's chief immigration officer was fired hours after the emergence of a video of him accepting a gift from one of Europe's most notorious drug barons. In a video posted Friday by the investigative website called Follow the Money, Alusain Kane can be seen laughing at a party while taking a gift from George Letikers, a fugitive Dutch trafficker believed to be hiding out in Sierra Leone. A Malawi court ruled on Wednesday that a fugitive preacher wanted by South Africa for alleged rape, fraud, and forgery may be extradited to face the charges. According to the French news agency, AFP, the South African government had asked Malawi to return Shepo Bushiri and his wife after they fled the country in 2020 while on bail for alleged fraud and money laundering in a multi-million dollar case. The U.S. administration's efforts to end Russia's war in Ukraine are putting pressure on the Kremlin, but Moscow has made considerable territorial gains, and some in Russia say they are prepared to give up nothing. VOA's Jeff Cluster narrates this report from our team in Moscow.
Moscow this week suffered the biggest Ukrainian drone attack since the start of the war, leaving at least 3 dead and 17 injured. Many Muscovites are trying to ignore the war, but many also hope that negotiations between the Kremlin and the new U.S. administration will soon bring a peace that Russians consider a victory. Officials say the goal is international recognition of the new borders that the Russian army has obtained by force. Alexander Komarenko is a former Russian ambassador.
It is clear that there will be a bilateral settlement between us and Kyiv. It should be a peace treaty that will legalize the new borders of Russia and the post-Soviet borders of Ukraine.
Many in Moscow are already celebrating the new geopolitical scenario before the conflict is ended. Evgeny Fyodorov is a deputy in the State Duma for the ruling United Russia Party.
This is a real victory. You can open champagne. Also, it cannot be lost. Russia must continue the offensive because no one canceled the ambitions of the United States. Yes, they are afraid of us, but it does not mean that they abandoned their idea of a world empire.
After more than 3 years of war, independent media outlet Mediazona counts more than 95,000 Russian casualties. But these losses are not stopping the Kremlin from carrying on with the war. In a meeting with wives and mothers of deceased soldiers, Russian President Vladimir Putin said there would be no concession.
We are not going to do that. We must choose for ourselves a version of the world that would suit us and that would ensure peace for our country for a long historical perspective.
Critics of Putin can only speak from exile. As they see it, the Kremlin could make concessions, but giving up its territorial ambitions is out of the question. Anton Berabashin is editorial director of the Russian analysis group, Riddle.
Compromises can be presented on some other issues related to how the Ukrainian security architecture will be formed after the war. Moscow wants to be a participant in the formation of this new Ukrainian security architecture and, in fact, to describe what can be done and what cannot be done.
Russian officials are looking forward to a meeting with U.S. officials following the talks between U.S. and Ukrainian negotiating teams in Saudi Arabia. So far, there is no such gathering in sight. Jeff Custer, VOA News.
U.S. President Donald Trump said his administration has initiated the most extensive border and immigration crackdown in history during his recent speech to Congress. VOA's Paul Ndiho spoke with Chinhe Isimaya, president and CEO of Sceptre 3 Global Advisors, a global risk management firm, about President Trump's immigration policy shift.
There's been a significant shift in the administration's policy as it relates to immigration, and most of that is around enforcement. So we've had a number of immigration laws in the books, but there's been a lot of frustration, especially over the last few decades, but it's really mounted in the last 4 years because there seemed to be a very deliberate posture and position by the prior administration, either not to enforce some of the laws on the books or to put in place certain programs that made it easier for immigrants to either obtain or apply for asylum and then violate those applications or to come into the U.S. So there seemed to be a very different posture with the prior administration, and President Trump is now enforcing those laws that have been on the books for a really long time.
President Trump ran on this issue and the Americans agreed with him. But he has continued to get a lot of criticism in regard to how they have carried out some of these deportations. You and I come from Africa. There are a lot of Africans who have been deported, whose families have been, you know, affected by these deportations. Your thoughts on that?
You were very right in noting that the president did run on this. He identified a high degree of frustration in a lot of American cities. If you look across New York City, which has traditionally been a melting pot, there have been a lot of concerns around the increase in violent crime in the streets. But
and that was Chinhe Isimaya, president and CEO of Sceptre 3 Global Advisors. She spoke to viewers Paul Ndiho. And that's it for this Thursday, March 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, saying, have a lovely day.